Good morning, Steeler Nation. This is Rudy, Rude Dog Reyes, on the RudeDogShow.com. You know, this afternoon, we're going to start the show by not stating that this is just another interview with just another player, but someone who knows what it takes to have his guard up whilst in protection. When you have to block for a quarterback, which he did for Ben Roethlisberger, one starts to wonder what it takes to perform such a daunting task. This gentleman knows, and for two seasons, Kendall Simmons understands it all too well. Good morning, Kendall. How are you?
Good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking your time out. I know you have 10,000 things going on, and I just want to essentially take a little bit of time just to kind of get familiar with you, as well as the film that I've seen of you and watched you for years, obviously, much like Steeler Nation has. How's everything going for you?
Everything's going pretty good, man. Pretty good. Right now, just waiting for the kids to get home. Got a couple hours before they get off the bus, and then the house will turn into a tornado like it normally does. And really, I've been traveling a lot, doing a lot of speaking for kids living with diabetes, both type 1 and type 2. And that's really become my life over the last 4 years, is retired and just taking full advantage of that.
No doubt. It looks like we're going to start from the beginning, and we'll kind of work our way that direction. And from the beginning, you weren't always on the same line for protection. But destruction, as you exited high school with 70 tackles, 4 sacks, 5 forced return, and 1-4 touchdown. On top of that, many accolades to support your stellar career. In addition, a district MVP, Clarion Ledger, top 10, number 2 offensive line prospect, which just blew my mind when I read that, and I seen that come across. And lastly, an all-star game participant, and we're only talking high school. Kendall, what was it like to be part of a superior team as a whole in high school?
You know what? It was one of those deals where you see so many different guys across your state. And really, to be honest with you, it was only a couple of people that I played with that were on that same all-star team that I knew of. When you get on the teams with guys like Ken Lucas, who played in the NFL a long time, you had Kenyatta Walker, who was a first-round pick for Tampa Bay. You had Deuce McAllister out of Ole Miss, who was a first-round pick for the Saints. We had so many guys that on that team that had an opportunity to play in the NFL and on D1 schools. It was amazing to me. I was kind of in awe, like it was when I first got to Auburn, being around guys like Tequila Spikes and Damian Craig and different guys like that. And even at a higher level, once I got to Pittsburgh and being around guys like Jerome Bettis and Hines Ward. So to me, I was just happy to have opportunity to be a part of something like that. And I never thought I'd get that opportunity.
Well, you definitely did. I mean, look, you were an individual athlete. You devastated most of the competition, your respective division in high school. What did you attribute to your successes? Was it conditioning? Was it eating right? Was it a combination? Or was there something more to your demeanor that was implanted inside of you from a very young age that motivated you?
Everything from the time I learned how to do anything athletically, as far as playing ball, from baseball, basketball, football, it was all about, can you sustain it? You're not going to amount to much. You're going to be just like a lot of the great athletes that were in my hometown. You're probably going to end up back here at some point. You know, you're only going to make it so far. And, to me, that was motivation to break that mold. My folks were very supportive of me and my two sisters and my younger brother. Anything we wanted to do, they, sacrificed for it and made opportunities for us to be able to do those type of things. So to me, the motivation for me from that day until the day I retired from the NFL was all about, you are not big enough, you're not fast enough, your arm's not long enough. You know, I didn't have the same type of height and strength as some of the other guys I played with, but my key for me was my motor was turned wide open all the time. and that's how I played.
Well, that was on display. I mean, look, there are places in Mississippi, the Delta, as an example, where I was watching the Blind Side the other day. I hate to make that movie as a reference, but it's valid, and it's real time. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to see it for myself. You get caught in the Delta, you're really not going to get out. And if you do get out, it's going to be in a body bag. So you found a way to not only excel with both parents, and to be honest with you, even in today's society, even with parents, sometimes it's just a single parent, but you were fortunate enough to have two. I mean, from an athletic standpoint, did you always feel that there was a competitive edge, a competitive nature that you possessed to make you get to the best of who you were to excel?
No, you know what? Honestly, I did. To me, I everything I did and I participated in, I did it because I loved it. It wasn't that I felt like I was better than other folks in these certain things. I remember people saying it when I was a kid, but I never believed any of that stuff. I was out there because I loved doing it. I was around my buddies, and I really enjoyed doing it. I tell people all the time that my favorite sport is baseball. I love baseball, but football is what paid for school. And fortunately enough, got me to the point where I am now and gave me a whole lot of opportunities. But, you know, I really enjoy baseball. And so I just had people behind me that said, this is what you're going to do. But the main thing that stuck out the most to me was my mom and my dad both were like, sports will disappear if your books aren't right. I don't care what else happens. You won't be able to play if you don't, you know, make the grade. So.
Literally and figuratively speaking, we're talking about an education that you received not only through high school, but that you excelled in when you were at Auburn. And you just kind of blew the lid off people's eyes. I mean, literally, you won an SEC championship. You had switched over to the other side of the ball. I mean, I have to ask you, you played guard in the NFL. You protected Ben Roethlisberger's back, yet you played on the defensive line during high school, and then you switched when you went to Auburn. How did that transition become possible? I mean, how did you switch over to the other side, and how easy was it for you to maintain that stature on the O-line?
I tell you what, I attribute that to my O-line coach when I first got to Auburn. His name was Rick Trickett. He's an offensive line coach at Florida State now. I still talk to him. And every school that recruited me, they recruited me as a defensive lineman, and they all told me I was going to get redshirted. I didn't want to sit on the bench. I wanted to play. And Coach Trickett showed more interest, and Auburn showed more interest than any other school did. And he told me, this is one thing that stuck with me the most. He's like, look, if you're a good offensive lineman, you're going to have a longer career than a defensive lineman in the NFL. You have the potential to possibly get to that point. And if you want to play and start as a freshman at Auburn, you come and play with me. If you don't, you play defense. I was on the defensive side of the ball at Auburn maybe a couple of days, and quickly I ended up on offense. And the only game I didn't play my freshman year was the first game we played at Virginia in 97. And after that, I started every game, all the way up until the SEC championship game started, in that versus Peyton Manning. So that was the motivation for me. I wanted to play. I did not want to sit on the bench and watch somebody else. So whatever I could do to participate, just tell me what I needed to do.
And you did that. Look, in 2002, Steelers select you 30th overall in the 2002 NFL draft. With defense in mind, I don't know if they had looked at you as an O-lineman, but of course, you know, teams will take certain attributes of certain players, as Steelers do explicitly, and say, look, this is what we have. This is what you're good at. You know, coaches tend to evaluate you, and we'll go into training camp as well, because obviously we're exiting training camp second to last game against Green Bay this upcoming Sunday. But, you excelled. And so there were a lot of other players on the board. However, I mean, you had people like Brian Thomas, who ended up being drafted by the Jets as a D lineman. I mean, were you solely going to go into that Steelers locker room and wanting to be on the defensive line, or was your heart set on being on that offensive line to do the best of your ability while you were there?
Oh, man, I was a full-fledged offensive lineman from the time from the day I switched it over. I played everything in high school except for kickoff. You know, played both sides of the ball, went both ways. And I played the game aggressively. And I love contact. So anytime they call any type of sweep or screen or trap play on offense and I was playing guard in high school, to me that was an opportunity to hit somebody just like it was on defense. Mm-hmm. So that's saying that I continued to play that way all the way through college and through the NFL. I tried to take advantage of any opportunity I could get 300 plus pounds moving and throw it at somebody.
I would say so. And, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to speak to Ramon Foster or spend some time with Ramon or even Kelvin Beachum, but I had the pleasure of interviewing both of these gentlemen, and they both come off, you know, from college as an offensive lineman. Obviously had love for other games. You have your love for baseball. When it came to technique, I mean, you're excelling at a different level. You're working with a different offensive line coach. Fortunately enough for Kelvin Beachum and Ramon Foster, they have one heck of an offensive line coach when it comes to Mike Munchak. When we're talking technique, what was it that you took away from the Steelers that helped you throughout your career from a training standpoint?
It's funny, and I'm going to backtrack just a little bit about what you said about my coach Mike Munchak. I really enjoyed him. He worked me out during my pro day at Auburn. And I had never snapped the ball at center before. And, you know, I kind of messed around with it in college. I was like the emergency center, just in case something happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, he worked me out during my pro day. And I knew who he was and what his, you know, his name and everything. I was like, man, this guy is great. And, you know, he just said if I was there maybe in the second round for Tennessee, they might pick me. And I said, man, I'd love to play for this guy. But I ended up with a other offensive line coach and Coach Grimm, Russ Grimm in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And the one thing that stood out the most for me with Coach Grimm is that he knew every one of us individually in our personalities and knew how to touch our buttons in a certain way to get us to perform the best and make us perform as a group. The one thing that you can ask any lineman that played under him and you know, you might have to beat this out. I'm going to try to, you know, this is what exactly what he said to us. He said, I don't care if you blocked a guy ass backwards as long as you get your job done. That's all I care about. He said, if you have to block him out like you're getting a rebound, get him blocked, get in the way. It doesn't matter. The play is never going to end up the way you draw it up on the board. But all we ask you to do as a group is to do your job. And that gave us the freedom as offensive linemen to play with our own styles, but still make it work as a group. As long as we got the hole open for Jerome, that's all that matters, man.
You guys performed probably one of the best offensive lines for the Steelers in recent memory, going against a very high-powered, high-octane offense, and definitely not a shabby defense in Seattle. When it came to being in Detroit, 2003 season, you're evaluated, and you discover that you were a type 1 diabetic. Now, I have diabetes that runs in my family as well. You know, you change your eating habits, you change your attitude, you have to modify your intake and what you take, when you take it, and how much you take of it. I'm sure that was something that you were really surprised about. I mean, not only having to manage your football career, but something else to add to your plate for the rest of your life. Forget about football for a second, for the rest of your life. How did that affect your diet, and how were you able to manage that amongst everything else going on in your life at that time?
I was blessed to be put in a situation with the Steelers organization had dealt with diabetes before me, and tight end Jonathan Hayes. And I think he's in Cincinnati now. I think he still is. Mm-hmm. And also the Rooney family have diabetes in their family. So they knew exactly what I was going through. The training staff went to all my appointments with me. It made the transition easier. The only thing that people didn't realize is what type of toll it takes on you mentally. For one, you have the pressure of being a first-round pick to have to play and really perform, and then your body is starting to go through a change that you don't know anything about diabetes at all. You didn't have to deal. You really didn't deal with it in your family as a whole, other than your grandmother having it, and you just didn't know anything about that. You just figured she was old and was sick, period. Mm-hmm. It made it hard. It really did. And diabetes affected every snap I had in football, from practice to the games. And I can honestly say I never played a game and felt absolutely perfect, where I'm like, man, this is going to be a great day. Mm-hmm. You always had that little bit of a doubt back there, you know, that, okay, I feel good now, but when this thing's going to go south? And you could never, and with diabetes, you never know. It's ever changing. It changes constantly, and you have to learn to adapt to it. And that's what I did, man. I took probably on game day, I averaged 8 to 10 shots a game because my blood sugar was all over the place.
Yeah.
Trying to get it down to where I felt good, you know, good. And it was just up and down all the time.
Yeah.
And you mentally have to go to a different place to handle a lot of that.
Definitely. It takes toll. If it's not managed correctly, it could take a negative toll on your physicality. You start, you know, aching in places you don't want to. You start feeling very lightheaded, very loopy. And I advise anybody who's listening right now, if you have diabetes in your family, you have not been checked, I suggest you do, because that can be very fatal. Looking at the rest of your career, it's been a part of your life living with the diabetes on top of injuries. Look, you heard from 04 to 05. You came back to help the Steelers win its fifth Lombardi. There's a mental toll in addition to what you currently have going on. We're just talking about diabetes. You had to sit out for the entire year. How was it mentally from that standpoint able – I mean, how were you able to just stand there and watch all this unfold and you're not even able to get back onto the field?
It was hard. You don't feel like you're a part of it. And no matter how people tell you you are, you know, try to help in different ways, it really makes it tough because you want to contribute. And the year we went and played the Jets, and we got beat in the playoffs by them. We went 15-1. I knew we were going to the Super Bowl that year, and I was hurt. That's when I tore my ACL, and that was extremely hard to watch. And I was lucky enough the next year, like you said, to play all the games and go to the Super Bowl and win it. It was really tough. To me, probably the toughest season of all for me was my last year in Pittsburgh when I tore my Achilles, and that was week 3, Monday Night Football against the Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. And I know the play. I've ran it 50,000 times, could do it in my sleep. And, you know, dealing with that and watching them go and play in the Super Bowl and beat Arizona, that was the toughest of all of them. It was tougher than being diagnosed with diabetes because, you know, you had to sit there and watch somebody else do your job. And that was hard.
Well, you had attributed a lot to that Steelers offensive line, a lot. And we're talking from not only a cheerleading standpoint, but you had been with the team for quite some time at that point. You know, 6 years mm-hmm. later, here you are. You've protected Ben Roethlisberger in many different situations, jet sweeps, trying to open those gaps, making sure that, you know, Willie Parker can get through. And it's just what a daunting task that you had on top of everything else you had going on. You're able to do your absolute best. You helped out, whether anybody had told you or not, or whether it was self-doubt, you helped the Steelers get to that point. So, and I remember watching you play, and it was just fantastic. That Arizona team, just from the onset, was really trying to push the tempo in the latter part of that game. And you did a lot on the sidelines to help everybody stay in check because you were the tenured guy. You know, you had the time and you had the experience. You had the personality. When it came to that season-ending injury, I know you were doing it in your sleep. I'm sure you repeated the injury and how you could have possibly avoided it in your sleep as well. Monday Night Football, Did you believe that you left it all on the field during that 2008 championship run? Was there anything that you could atone that you would have done differently during that season?
No. No, I mean, I was an old guy in the room. My best friend, Alan Fanica, was gone. My buddy, Marvell Smith, he was dealing with, I think he might have been out. I think he might have left. I might have been the only one left at that point. And it was hard, man. It really was. I think, yeah, Marvell's still there. And it was hard for me to deal with that. I did everything I could. It wasn't no avoiding the injury. I honestly, I thought about looking at the tape, and it's funny. I left the stadium and went home, and I watched the replay, and I saw my foot jump off the ground. Nobody was even near me. Nobody fell on me or anything, and I saw it on SportsCenter. And still to this day, I haven't looked at it. I hadn't seen it on film. So it wasn't nothing. I did everything I could, and it was just – it happened, and I couldn't change it.
Right. You know, we can always go back and say, well, I should have, would have, could have. No, I did. I did my best. I did what I had to do. I did what was asked of me to do. I executed, flawlessly. I protected Ben and the rest of my guys to the best of my ability. And you left it all on the field. So when it comes to conversations about one of the best O-lines to go and win, and even if you weren't playing, you were still playing. Mentally, you were in the game. Physically, you may not have been, but that doesn't change anything. That doesn't change your ring. It doesn't change everything you had done that led up to that point. And to be honest with you, probably one of the unsung offensive linemen in that 2008 season, to be perfectly honest with you, just based on what I've seen. And I've watched it many times myself.
Yeah.
So
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I really do.
Absolutely welcome, for sure. Now, near the end here, we have you had went over to New England. You had played with them for a little bit of time, and then your last stint was with Buffalo. How did that come about? I mean, did the Patriots contact you through your agent, or was it something that they signed you a 3-year deal on September 6th? So, and then what was really weird was they cut you on the 6th of November, yet signed a 3-year contract. So they paid you for the two remainder years, or was it just null and void at that point once you were released?
It was just null and void at that point. I tried out for Buffalo before I even went to New England. I got a call from Buffalo, went up, tried out for them. The same day I tried out for them, they were leaving to go play a preseason game. And they said they wanted to sign me. But they, they were going to wait till they got back. So they told me that, I could go home, they'll call me back or whatever. But as I was sitting in my hotel room, my agent called and said, well, before you leave Buffalo, New England wants to try you out. And so I said, okay, I'll look at it as an opportunity maybe to, get a chance to win, maybe win another Super Bowl or whatever. And I talked to Coach Belichick on the phone, and he told me I'd be competing, maybe get to share some time with Stephen Neal or whatever it may be. So I got there and, passed physical, did decent in the workout and everything got going, but I just never fit. I never really fit into what they had going on. And it was a learning experience. It was one of them things where you always think the grass is greener on the other side, in a sense, and there's no place like Pittsburgh. And I really realized that once I left, that, if I had an opportunity to turn around and go back, I would have taken it. And so it just didn't fit me, and I ended up getting released like game number 10. And that next morning, we end up at the house for about a week and packed up everything, got home with the kids. And as soon as I got home, I was home for maybe a day. And Buffalo said, hey, we want you. And I turned around and jumped on the flight back the next morning at 6 a.m. and ended up in the starting lineup that same weekend. So it was an amazing deal for me because I felt like when I walked in the room in Buffalo, I had been there for 4 or 5 years already. I felt like I fit in there. I didn't fit in New England at all. So I was blessed. It was definitely a learning experience all the way around.
No doubt about that. I mean, anybody who goes from – and LeGarrette Blount did it last year when the Steelers acquired him as part of the running back core and then released him because of the annex that him and Le'Veon Bell were part of. However, Yeah, he went back to New England to eventually win a Lombardi. Obviously, there's a lot of asterisks behind that, But when it comes to being a part of a championship team, I mean, once a Steeler, always a Steeler, regardless of where you end up going to, what team you land on, who you work with, you know, it doesn't really matter. Once a Steeler, always a Steeler. So I was looking at an article by a young lady by the name of Nellie Gonzalez, and she had wrote a story about you. It was a real quick blurb, in fact, called The Great Auburn Man. And when I looked at it, I thought to myself, you know, best blocking lineman in your senior year, and you definitely were. I mean, looking at Auburn tape, there was absolutely nobody. Your quarterback was more protected than probably Ben Roethlisberger, at least in a college capacity, against equally sized, you know, guys. But your technique was so solid. You moved back to Auburn. Is that where you're currently living right now?
Sure.
Okay. How is post-football treating you? And you had stated in the beginning of the interview that you were doing some public speaking about diabetes. Tell me about that, and are you part of a foundation, or you have your own?
Well, right now I speak for Novo Nordisk. They're the leading diabetes company in the world right now, and I've been speaking for them for the last 4 years. But here in my local area, me and my wife and a friend of mine, she played on the LPGA Tour, and she has type 1 diabetes. We host a golf tournament every year called Swing for Diabetes that give back to the East Alabama Diabetes and Nutrition Center here, and it covers all the people in East Alabama, and it helps them out. So that's what I've been doing, really, man. I tell people all the time, jokingly, that if I'm not on an airplane somewhere traveling, speaking, and doing something, taking kids to soccer practice or gymnastics or swimming or something. So diabetes has definitely taken a large part of my life since, you know, post-football.
Well, it seems that you are definitely a busy person. You have a lot of stuff going on, and hopefully anybody out there, again, whoever's listening who has family diabetes and you have not been checked, I suggest you go get it checked out. Kendall, so much for having you on the show today. I wish you the best in this endeavor and any other endeavors you may be a part of in the future. And with that being said, I thank you very much for your time.
Hey, appreciate the opportunity, man, and thank you for reaching out and finding me on Twitter. And definitely we'll be following you from here on out, and best of luck with you and your show and everything else.
I do appreciate that. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kendall Simmons, former guard of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, of course, this is Rudy Rude Dog Reyes on the RudeDogShow.com.